get real. You know, real guys talk real sports. We will. Race, market, game, change. It's about to get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Certain guys, you just got to recognize, I got to pay the money. I got to keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We'll make excuses. We're not going to make excuses. Sometimes you got to create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron with this.
I do have a bit of a problem with execution. Right?
He burned it. A lot of bridges. He's going to be hated in Chicago. He's going to be hated in Cleveland. He's going to be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's going to be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them. All right, good evening, world. How are you all doing? This is Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, where real guys talk real sports. You are now in tune to the resistance. It's your man, Marcus, the Game Changer here, holding you down for the next 2 hours with my man, Phil T, a.k.a. D. Newell, a.k.a. the Sports PhD, in the house. What up, Phil?
What's up, man? I'm ready to ride with you. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about, man. I'm in your passenger seat. Let's do it.
All right. Be riding shotgun with a full clip. So we're going to keep it rolling. All right? So we got a lot of show to get into tonight. You guys got to excuse my voice. Game Changer has a little bit of a cold. But we're going to work through that. You know, I'm like Jordan. I play through it. You know what I'm saying? I play through. You know, I come out here pale, you know, hacking up a lung. I'm going to deliver, though. We're going to deliver over the next 2 hours. You know, that's what we do. We're the Real Sports Guys. D-Wheels could not be with us tonight. It is his lovely daughter, Kira's birthday. Happy birthday, Kira. Enjoy it. Enjoy. Have a good time. Your father needs to be with you. You don't need to be on here talking sports with us. You know, we got our priorities in order. Okay?
That's right.
Real Sports Guys got their priorities in order. You never hate on the RSG crew. We keep it real. We got our priorities in order. So Devon couldn't be with us tonight. But me and Phil T, Sports PhD, going to hold you down. So we're going to jump right into things. Last week, big event, NBA draft. You know, your initial impressions. One, let's just talk about the coverage. ESPN, you know, they had the draft. They carried the draft. And I actually, you know, I have NBA TV. So I get to – last week they were running a lot of old drafts on NBA TV. So I was watching some of those, man, and just listen to them talk about and break down a Lorenzen Wright. A Samaki Walker, and how they were projected for these cats, man, and then and knowing what they turned out to be, it's real interesting how we go into the draft, and everybody's got tremendous upside, and everybody has huge potential, but some of these cats never even come close. Some of them are in the league for, like, when, you know, Samaki and Lorenzen were in the league for both 10-plus years, so they played. They had good careers. You know,
yeah. You're trying to figure out who's gonna be this year's Stromile Swift.
Right. Who's gonna be a Stromile? Yeah, because then you're looking at your Stromile Swift. Well, this year's Skitter. Who's gonna be Skitter? Who's gonna be Skitter's Diddy? Who's gonna be Nicolas Skitter's Diddy? You know, a top five cat from another country that, you know, I was telling Phil off air. You know, we was talking about Biombo and Valanciunas and some of these other cats who got names I can't really pronounce, and how it's like 3 minutes of game footage on these dudes. And they all top five picks, man. And the footage is all jacked up, look like Zapruder film, all messed up, man. Look like some Watergate tapes or something. You notice
the franchises that pick them up, the Raptors, the Wizards, the Kings. I mean, teams that typically have not done quite well in the draft. You know, the franchises that have had some whiffs in the past.
Yeah, it's a couple whiffs that we definitely gonna get into. You know, we definitely gonna get into some of the whiffs. You know, Cleveland opened up the draft taking Kyrie Irving, which seemed like a no-brainer pick to me. You know, Kyrie, I've heard a lot of interesting analysis of Kyrie's game. You know, I've heard everything from, you know, he'll be a borderline all-star to, you know, he's Andre Miller. which sounds bad when you say it out loud. You know what I'm saying? When you think about it, Andre Miller is actually a pretty solid NBA point guard. He's been a pretty solid NBA point guard for about 8-9 years now. So there's nothing wrong with being Andre Miller. It's just that it's Andre Miller. And when you say Andre Miller out loud, it just doesn't really, you know, you don't want to take Andre Miller number one in any draft. I mean, I think in Andre Miller's own draft, he was like the 12th pick. So Cleveland takes Kyrie Irving. To me, that was a no-brainer. He was the best player there. They needed somebody who could bring some life to the franchise and who could spark the franchise and get people re-energized and re-interested in everything. So I thought that was a good pick. What was your interpretation of that first pick, Phil?
You know, I'm with you. I'm trying to figure out, is this guy going to be an Isaiah Thomas or a John Bagley? You know, just trying to figure out, you know, exactly where this guy is going to fit, because I saw him play against a decent Michigan State team early in the season, and this kid dropped, you know, 25, 30 points on a solid Michigan State team. But beyond that, I didn't get an opportunity to watch him too much. And so, you know, I'm just kind of not quite sure why he's projected to be so strong. You know, one of the things I heard Villa say earlier in the week is, if you look at Irving over the last, you know, if you put him in any of the last four or five drafts, he's probably barely making the lottery. So, you know, it kind of speaks to how weak this draft is in terms of projections.
Absolutely. I think if you put him in last year's draft crop, he doesn't even come out. You know, after playing 11 games, I don't think he would have even come out last year. You know, I think saying that he would have barely made the lottery is a little harsh, but I think he would have had he would have been a top 10 pick off of potential. But I think I think, you know, guys are right on with looking at this group. And I realized it about a couple picks in that, you know, after about the lottery and just watching how teams were picking, I realized that these teams were – GMs must have written this draft off as, I can get a role player, and that's what I'm trying to get the best role player I can get. I'm not projecting these guys to be stars or nothing like that, because some of the picks, again, were head scratches for myself. But with Kyrie, you know, you're right. I mean, he could be an Isaiah Thomas, you know. And, you know, people talk about him and Williams being probably the only two all-stars, potential all-stars out of this draft. Kyrie Irving going to have a hell of a time cracking an all-star team in the East. He's going to have to be a hell of a point guard to crack an all-star team in the East. When you just look at, he's got to beat out a Rondo. He's got to beat out a Rose. Deron Williams, if he stays in the East. If Chris Paul ever comes to the East. You know, he's going to have a hell of a time. John Wall, when he puts it together, I think he'll probably become an all-star. Before Kyrie Irving. So, you know, he's going to have a hell of a time cracking an all-star team in the Eastern Conference. I think, you know, best case scenario, he's going to be a borderline all-star, really be effective, really lead their team some places. And, you know, like you said, worst case scenario is John Bagley. For you youngins out there, look up John Bagley real quick. I got access to the world. It's called the Internet. Look him up.
I think it's a good sign for the NBA, though. You know, I've really been encouraged with the NBA play over the last couple of years, because it seems like the play has consistently improved over the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, to me, a sign of that is strong point guard play. If you think about the 80s, a lot of these teams that were winning, but also, you know, the borderline teams, you know, your 5, 6, 7 seeds, they all had pretty strong point guards for the most part. I mean, think of those Cleveland Cavs teams with Mark Price. You know, think about those Atlanta teams with Doc Rivers and Battle, guys like that. I mean, I like the way that the NBA is getting more towards point guard play, and you're starting to see a lot of good point guards kind of growing up in the system.
Yeah, and you know, this is you know, again, for those of you that don't know this about me out there, Game Changer is a deeply rooted hoop head. So, you know, I get deep into my hoops. And one thing I'm gonna give y'all a little taste of the future real quick. I'm gonna give y'all a glimpse into my crystal ball. It's gonna be interesting over the next couple of years, because next year's draft is gonna be heavily loaded. You know, unless there's some CBA rules with the new CBA that prevent kids from coming out at different points. Next year's draft is going to be heavily loaded with power forwards, big guys. And if, you know, under the current rules, if it's still one and done, the year after that the next year, the 2012 high school class, the like top, not like 8 or 9 of the top 10 players coming out of, that are going to be high school seniors next year are all big men, centers, like traditional centers. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out over the next couple of years, because right now the league is point guard heavy. You know, point guard play has really stepped up the game in the league. And what it looks like is going to be happening, there's going to be a lot of bigs coming out over the next couple of years. So it's going to be interesting to see how the league shifts eventually. You know, when that shift starts to take place and you have a bunch of young big men in the game who are really making a difference. I mean, I think you're starting to see it with the Blake Griffins and the Kevin Loves. And by the time these younger guys start to hit the league, Blake and Kevin will be, you know, steeped in their primes, you know, and, you know, maybe Andrew Bynum finally finds some health, maybe Greg Oden finally finds some health, and then you have 3 or 4 big men who are really playing key roles in the league. Who knows? But I agree with you. Right now, the point guard play is excellent. And, you know, a lot of analysts say you don't need a point guard to win in this league, or you need a point guard to win in this league, and that's true and that's not true. You need good point guard play, period. You need good decision-making, period. It could be your small forward. It could be, you know, whoever's going to be making decisions with the ball needs to be a good decision-maker. If that happens to be your point guard, great. I mean, the finals were a perfect example of that. Jason Kidd had an impact on the game, but it wasn't from putting balls in the basket. It was because he made good decisions. You know what I'm saying? And the same thing with Miami. Miami got to the finals because they have playmakers who were making good decisions with the ball. Now, whatever happened in the finals, happened in the finals, and, you know, those playmakers wasn't making the same kind of decisions. But what got them there was the guys who had the ball, whether it be LeBron or D-Wade, making the proper decisions with the ball. And that's really what it boils down to. You got to have quality decision makers. If that happens to be a Chris Paul or Darren Williams or Derrick Rose or Rajon Rondo or Russell Westbrook, then that's who it is. And again, you look at Oklahoma City, maybe one reason that they didn't beat Dallas is because Westbrook wasn't making good decisions down the stretch, you know, of those games. He wasn't making good decisions with the ball. He wasn't making the proper reads. And that's what it boils down to, decision-making. And you need point guards. You know, your point guard should be your best decision-maker, but it's not necessarily the only guy who's going to make decisions. You know, if you got, you know, and it used to be the guy, you might – my normal go-to in this situation used to be Zach Randolph. But I can't really go at Zach no more like that, man, because he kind of turned his game around a little bit. What I used to say is if Zach Randolph's your best decision-making, you're in trouble. But that's not – I gotta find somebody else to beat up on. But you're right, man. The league is in a great place right now.
Yeah.
It's going to continue to get better. I mean, if Rubio's half of what they say he's supposed to be, He'll be a good guard for a long time. You know, the league went into a lull for a while. You know, around, you know, the late 90s, around the lockout, you know, the lockout in 99. It went into a little bit of a lull, and you know, part of that was because it had some reluctant superstars. You know, Stephon Marbury's, the Iversons, you know, guys like Antoine Walker, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, you know, that vaunted 96 class produced a lot of all-stars, But at the same time, it produced a lot of guys who never really reached their full potential. And then you had, like, the 98 draft where, you know, you had – I think that was the year Vince and them came out. I think that was the year Vince and Oval Candy was the first pick. You know, Bibby – and it's crazy. Bibby was never an all-star. You know, even those good years in Sacramento, he was never an all-star. And you had Ray LaFrance. You know, but then you had Dirk and Paul Pierce. But then that draft was kind of bare. And even, you know, you had Vince coming out of that draft. And Vince, you know, his career just took a turn for the worse.
You know, reaching back to that point guard statement of just how good the point guard play was in the 80s, looking at the 87 NBA playoffs, I'm going to list some of the point guards that were in the playoffs. Magic Johnson, Terry Porter for the Blazers, Fats Lever, Michael Adams, Mo Cheeks, Derek Harper, Dennis Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, Kevin Johnson, Nate McMillan, and Michael Jordan played point guard back then. I mean,
yeah, man.
Getting back to that point in a couple of years with some of these young guys that are just developing and the NBA kind of getting back to playing two-point guards at the same time. You know, we saw that happen in Denver a little bit. You know, we saw that happen in the finals with Dallas. You know, to me it's a good thing because you're seeing, you know, like you mentioned, you're seeing better decisions with the ball. You're seeing guys, even if they're pass first or if they're pass shoot even, I mean, you're seeing better basketball. You're seeing better ball movement. You're seeing, you know, shooters getting better looks. I mean, to me it's just a better game to watch.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, and I think that's really where the impact is, and I think the Cavs made a great choice getting Kyrie Irving, because if you can get a guy who's going to help, who's going to be able to make those decisions and get people the ball in the right place, it's going to make an Antoine Jameson seem that much better, and whoever they decide to fill out around him on that roster, it's going to make all those guys that much better. There's another piece to this whole Cavs puzzle with Baron Davis. You know, if the Cavs decide to put Baron on the market, now Baron's got a hell of a contract that he's owed a lot of money, and so it's going to be hard to move that. But Baron's a guy, if he gets with a Miami or the Lakers, and I think if he got with one of those teams, he'd definitely be motivated. When you got a motivated Baron Davis, a lot of people, Baron could have been, you know, each year in the league, one of the top three point guards in the league every year of his career, if he was focused every year of his career. But that's the thing about Baron, is that he was never really focused. I mean, with the speed and quickness, he was a lot like Derrick Rose. You know, he was a lot like Derrick Rose in that he was just physically more gifted than a lot of point guards, because he was 6'3", he was about 220 pounds, he could move, you know, he was quick, he had hops, he could jump, he could dunk on you in a minute, and then he could stroke you, and he could pass the ball. And yeah, Baron was just never focused and never really quite put it together. But he's a piece that if Cleveland decides to move him, you know, he could really shift the power of how things are going in the NBA right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams are going to be leery of Baron, though, especially if this lockout happens and, you know.
He's a Sean Kemp candidate.
Yeah, you know.
That's another thing we got to do. We got to make a list of Sean Kemp candidates out there. Because it's a lockout coming up, and the lockout ain't friendly for everybody, man.
That's right. You know, I mean, if this happens like it's happening in football, where guys are kind of on their own to work out, you know, Baron's already announced he's got a weakness for certain Mexican dishes, okay? So, you know, we got to watch out for Baron. He might put on that veteran 20, and all of a sudden team's going to be pushing back.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to want him, so. But,
yeah,
you know,
man, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So then with the second pick in the draft, The Minnesota Timberwolves, who never quite seem to really know what the hell they're doing when it comes to the draft, they took Derek Williams, who, I mean, I like Derek Williams. I like Derek Williams a lot. I think he's going to be a decent NBA player for a long time. I don't know if he'll ever get to all-star status, but I think he's going to be a decent NBA player for a long time. But I don't like him in Minnesota. I don't like him in Minnesota. He doesn't, to me, he doesn't seem like he fits well next to Kevin Love. To me, they already got that kind of a guy in Beasley. I get why they did it, because they didn't want to get bashed for not taking him. But at the same time, I mean, I just don't feel like he was what they needed or he fit. You know, I'd rather them try to work out a trade for the pick. It doesn't seem like they was getting anything that they wanted. But, you know, that's who they got. I think he'll do all right, but I don't think that's a place that's maximizing his potential. You know, I don't think he's going to maximize his potential. You know, it's kind of like when Evan Turner went to the Sixers last year. That's kind of how I view that pick, where it's like they already have Iguodala, who's basically what Evan Turner could become. You know what I'm saying? So he's going to be standing in Evan Turner's way. And when you take a guy number two, you should be taking a guy that you're going to be playing right away. Not a guy that's going to have to sit behind somebody, you know?
Right.
So I thought it was a common sense pick, but, you know, I don't think that's a good fit for the player. You know, for the franchise, it made sense. For the player, I don't think that's the best fit for him.
Yeah, I don't think Minnesota's done because, like you said, they got a lot of pieces that look very similar to each other. And, I mean, they're actually accumulating quite a bit of young talent here. And I think once the collective bargaining agreement's figured out and the teams have a better idea of what the cap situation is going to be and the contract situation in terms of the players, you know, I think at that point we're going to see Minnesota make some moves because, I mean, how do you play Derek Williams, Beasley, and Love at the same time? You know, with a young point guard and Rubio or whoever you're going to play at that spot. So, you know, I think at some point Minnesota's going to make a move. You know, or maybe they just kind of see how these guys progress. But from a realistic standpoint, I don't think you can expect all these guys to progress at the rate that they're projected to progress at. And in order to get maximum value for guys, you might have to get rid of one or two of those pieces this summer. You know, and maybe get a veteran to come in, you know, to maybe get your team started, you know, to be in a playoff contender at some point. Because actually, I don't think Minnesota's far away if they get the right pieces, because they got some depth. And, you know, I think these players are going to be okay in the next year or two.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I don't think they're very far away. They got a ways to go, but I agree. Getting some vets in there, they got some pieces that can attract some vets. And they can move some things around. And again, it's going to be interesting to see how Rubio. I'm interested to see how Rubio does. You know, they've been talking. I've been hearing about Rubio for about 4 years. You know, since he's about 15, 16 years old. About he's supposed to be that dude, and we finally going to get a chance to see. You know, we finally going to get a chance to see. I'm actually surprised that he came over. I'm actually surprised that he came over and is going to play with Minnesota. You know, if I was a Lakers, I'd have tried to make a play for him. You know, if I was a team like L.A. or New York, I'd try to make a serious play when he decided he was going to come over to see if I can get him and get that number two pick. If I was going to pull somebody off Minnesota's roster, I'd try to get Rubio in the number two pick. I don't know what it would have taken to get that, to get him out of there, because I know they've invested a lot in him, and they put a lot of resources into even getting him over here before he's even played. But that would have been something I would look into if I was Mitch Kupchak or Donnie Walsh, or somebody in a big market, because I know that's where he wants to end up.
Right.
And as soon as his rookie deal's up, I would imagine, unless they're winning and competing, he's going to be ghost. Now, in the first, what, like 10 picks? Like how many? We had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. First 10 picks, half of them are foreign dudes. Of the foreign guys, and they count Tristan Thompson as a foreigner because he was born in Canada. But he went to University of Texas. And they count Cancer as a foreigner because he's from Turkey. But he also was here last year, even though he didn't play. at the University of Kentucky. Of those, you know, Cantor, Thompson, Valanciunas, Jan Vesely. Hey, did you watch the draft?
Yeah, David Stern was having a hard time with the names.
Man, it got to a point where David Stern looked at a card one time and was like, man, this is some bull.
Right.
He's like, I hate it when it's like this, man. Can we get some regular names? Can we get some more Clay Thompsons up here? But Jan Vesely and then Bismack Biyombo. Of those five guys who went in the top 10, which foreigner is going to be the best in your eyes? Which foreigner who has the most opportunity to maximize the situation that they're in?
Well, I'm kind of disadvantaged because I've only seen half of them play.
Ain't nobody seen these cats. We're all at a disadvantage. The cats that drafted them is at a disadvantage, okay?
I saw Tristan Thompson play a few times. And he's got a lot of raw skills. But raw is the key word. He needs to get a little bit more polished in terms of having an NBA-ready three or four type of game. But on the boards, I mean, that kid gets after it. The kid from Congo, Bismack, and I don't even want to try to say his last name, he ended up going to the Kings, but then it landed with the Bobcats. I actually got an opportunity to see him play in the Nike Hoop Summit, and they actually ran that last week back in 07 when, I mean, the U.S. had that monster team. You know, they had all those kids that came out after the 07-08 college season. So, you know, you had Kevin Love, Mayo, Gordon, Derrick Rose, Singler. I mean, just that monster class. And in Bismack, you know, the kid from Congo, he had like 12 blocks in that game. He had a triple-double or pretty close to it. And, you know, this was 4 years ago. You know, you could see his body was still developing. But at the time, I'm thinking, wow, I mean, this kid's pretty athletic for his size. And so, to me, I think he's got the most upside. I like Cantor. He seems to have the most polished offensive game. And, you know, they say he's really good on the glass. But I'm going to go with the kid from Congo. You know, I mean, I could see him being a Tyson Chandler type, you know, a guy that can get in there and get you 8 to 10 points a game, but really patrol the middle. I don't know if that'll happen right now. You know, it might take a couple of years for him to get there, but I'm thinking he may be the guy.
Well, I can feel you on that. The guy I'm digging is Enes Kanter. I like Enes Kanter. I think he went to a good situation with the Jazz. The Jazz are another one of those teams that's kind of collected a lot of similar pieces. But I think their pieces fit well enough together where they can play them. You know, they got Favors, they got Jefferson, they got Millsap, and they got Cantor, all guys who are kind of power forward types. But all of them are kind of a different type of power forward. Favors is more athletic. Jefferson is an unbelievable scorer and rebounder. Millsap is kind of an energy dude, a little undersized. So, you know, but he got a decent jump shot, perimeter game. And I think Cantor is that guy who can come in and play center a little bit for them. He's got good size. I don't know very much about his game. But from what I've heard, I think he's got the best situation. For me, the next best guy is Biyombo. I like Biyombo going to the Bobcats because, one, they're not going to ask him to score. He can go in, do his duty, play D, rebound, get up and down the floor, and just be what he is, then I think that'll be good for him. Thompson, you know, I think the thing with each of these guys is I think they went into a situation where they're going to be behind a guy who kind of is similar. Like Biyombo is going to be behind Tyrus Thomas, who I think is a similar kind of cat. Thomas has more offense, but he's a shot blocker, an energy cat, a rebounder, a defender. Thompson is going in behind Jameson. If Thompson was smart and if the Cavaliers have any foresight, him and Jameson would be kicking it every day on the court if I was Cavs management. because that's who Thompson needs to model his game after, is Antoine Jameson. They got a similar build, similar style in college. If some of Jameson's offensive polish could rub off on Thompson, then they have themselves a player. And then Cantor is going in with, you know, Al Jefferson, who arguably has some of the best footwork in the league offensively. And then he's got a fellow countryman in Mema Okur there as well to kind of help him ease into the situation. So for Cantor, I think that's a real good situation. He's going to be in an environment with other bigs, so he's going to have to compete every day. He's going to be going against other guys who are good every day. So you're going to know what you're going to get right away because he's going to see a lot. And if he's going to be a player, you're going to see it every day in practice. So those are the guys I kind of like. The two other cats, Valanciunas and Vesely, man, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I see some footage on Valanciunas, and, you know, he had, like, two put-back layups, and the tape went off. And I was like, what am I supposed to do with that? It's funny what cats put on their YouTube highlights, man. Sleepers. You know, were there any sleepers in this draft for you, man? Guys who went, you know, outside the lottery who you think are going to be ballers. You know, when we talk about this draft 3 or 4 years from now, we're going to say, man, how the hell did that cat slip?
Yeah. You know, for me, I looked at the two kids from Purdue. Juwan Johnson, he got drafted late in the first round. He got traded to Boston, as well as Yutahn Moore. He got picked up in the second round. He's also going to Boston. And, you know, these are two guys that you and I saw in the NCAA tournament this past spring in Chicago. And, you know, I think of what you said, you know, because, you know, when I was watching Juwan Johnson, I'm thinking, like, man, this guy's game is NBA ready. You know, you raised the, you know, the critical point because I'm thinking this guy's a lottery. You know, I mean, and, you know, you tell me, well, I don't know. He's probably a late first, early second because what more can you do for him? I mean, what more can you expect him to develop into? He's already got a decent mid-range game. He's decent on the glass. He's okay in the post. I mean, what more can you really expect him to develop in? You know, his frame wasn't going to hold too much more weight. But I like that he's going to Boston. And I think that with the guys they have there, he may fit in where in a season or two, or even this coming season, if Big Baby doesn't sign back, I mean, we might see him fighting for minutes in the rotation, you know, as a rookie. And Yutahn Moore, I mean, I think any guy who needs to develop, I think you got two guys and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce that, you know, whenever you can spend time around those guys, especially, you know, if you got a game that might you know, benefit from being around them, I think it's a great situation. So for me, when I kind of took a step back the next day and looked at the draft, I said, wait a minute, these two kids from Purdue that had a lot of success, played 4 years, had a lot of success at Purdue, and now they're going into a winning situation with a lot of veterans in Boston. I mean, they may turn out to be pretty decent pros, especially if Boston after this year, you know, because, again, KG and Ray Allen, they're going to be free agents next summer. And so if Boston doesn't get it done this year or if they take a step back, you know, Danny Ainge may just kind of pull the plug and say, you know what, we're going to rebuild. And all of a sudden, now you got these two guys really looking for minutes a year from now. So for me, I see those two as sleepers that may become really productive, good NBA players.
Yeah, I like those picks, and I like how you broke that down. You know, I think Johnson, he puts on a little weight, and I think he's going to be a nice compliment, and he's going to be a nice complimentary player. He's kind of insurance in case they can't pay Big Baby. You know, they're going to need a guy who has some energy, who can come off the bench, bang a little bit, but still be able to knock down a mid-range jumper. So I think he's a little bit of insurance in case Big Baby falls through, and they just don't have enough money to pay him. A cat I like is Nolan Smith.
Okay.
I've never been big on Dookies, never been big on Dookies, and I'm still not very big on Dookies. But I like the fit of Nolan Smith going to the Blazers. I like that fit because I think he's the type of player that they like to get. Solid experience is going to come in, and if he's going to play, he's going to contribute. You know, Portland is something in the water. I don't know what it is, but guys get hurt when they go there. So you need to have depth in every position, and you need to have guys who are ready to step in and play at every position. They don't have a lot of guys there who they're waiting on. If you're on their roster, anticipate playing at some point during the season, because there are going to be some times where y'all down to 8 or 9 men, and they're going to need you out there. And Nolan Smith is a – if you watch Nolan Smith at all this season, his best attribute was playing in the pick and roll. When they put him in a pick and roll, he was dang hard to guard. And, you know, him pick and rolling with a LaMarcus Aldridge would be really hard to defend for a lot of teams. So I kind of like that pick, and I think that's why they took him. The other pick I really like is Chris Singleton going to the Wizards. Chris Singleton was a guy I was hoping would fall to Milwaukee. I was hoping the Bucks would get him. Dude's an excellent defender. He can defend, you know, four positions on the court, from point guard through power forward. He can guard those positions out on the floor. He's athletic. He still needs some offensive polish, but I would have loved to see him running the wing with Brandon Jennings. He's going to be running the wing with John Wall, which I think is a win-win for him. You know, he's going to be able to play some D. Small forward is a spot where they need some help. I think Chris Singleton is going to be one of those guys. Again, he may never be a star, but I think he's going to be a Posey-type guy down the line who's going to be on the championship winning. He's going to be a rotation player on the championship team for a while in his career. So Nolan Smith and Chris Singleton are guys I really liked in that second half of the draft. Now,
I got another one for you, Ken.
Lay it out.
Now we're talking about Portland, and kind of like how Joe Dumars used to take the point every once in a while from Isaiah. I'm gonna steal the inbound pass from you. And I'm gonna throw one to you.
Right.
Now for those that don't know out there, the Game Changer is a big Greg Oden believer. And I know you've been hitting at it the last couple of years. You know, and Greg Oden's going to be a free agent this year. Just as an aside, what teams do you think Oden would be a good gamble for teams to make on Oden to potentially be on their team for next year?
Man, and again, all of this depends on money, new CBA, and structure, and things like that. But teams that just off the top of my head seem like a good fit, you know, Boston. I think Oden would be great in Boston. They're talking about trying to get younger. Again, Greg Oden's only going to be 23. He's only going to be 23. You know what I mean? So if you can get 5 or 6 decent years out of him, where you get 68 to 70 games out of him a season, that would be excellent. You know, so a team like Boston who needs that big to hold down that back line, you're not going to have – I mean, basically he's going to have to be a taller version of Rondo in Boston, where he rebounds, he plays defense, the same way Rondo passes and plays defense, you know. And that's what Boston needs around the big three right now, you know, as they start to make that transition. And if I'm Boston and I can swing a deal to get Greg Oden in, now I have a foundation of Rondo, Jeff Green, and Greg Oden as potentially my big three going forward. So that's one team that I think, you know, Greg Oden would be an excellent fit on. Another team that I think could use his services would be a team like the Rockets. If they can or can't keep Yao Ming, getting a Greg Oden would, even if they can keep Greg Oden and keep Yao Ming, getting a Greg Oden would it's almost the idea that if you get two injured centers, they're not going to be hurt at the same time. You know what I mean? So when Yao is healthy, you got Greg, and when Yao goes down, you got Greg, and when Greg goes down, you got Yao, and you can't play them together because you get murdered away from the rim. But what you can do is you can limit their minutes. so that you're limiting the wear and tear on their legs and not have a drop-off as far as impact goes. The impact will shift, and the players you put around each of them will have to be different. You need to put more scores around Odin. You need to put more perimeter defenders around Yao. But overall, you got a situation where you're going to limit both of their minutes and not lose a whole lot of impact when they're not on the court. So that'd be another spot. And then another spot, quiet is kept. And I don't, again, I don't know if they have the money to do this.
He's on the road. But Oklahoma.
Oklahoma City. Wow. Oklahoma City. Because Oklahoma City has kept their cap space low. They've kept their cap space down, and they may have the money to roll to make a run at an Odin. Or hell, even the Mavericks. If the Mavericks let Tyson Chandler walk, I'd go after Odin if I'm Dallas. I'd absolutely go after Odin if I'm Dallas, you know, because you get younger, you get a similar impact. You know, Dallas wasn't running plays for Chandler. So you get a younger guy who can give you a similar type of impact, you know, a lot more of an injury risk, but you probably can get him at a lower price because he's not coming off a championship season where he was a key contributor. You know what I mean? So you could probably get him cheaper than you could, you know, Tyson Chandler. So that'd be a look I would make. So those are three teams that I think Odin will be solid fits for.
Under the current CBA, what kind of money in years do you think Odin would draw in the open market this summer?
Man, he can get anywhere from, I'd say, from $8 million a year to about $10-11 million a year.
Wow.
If a team is willing to, because he's a big, and with bigs, and they have to put an offer on the table that Portland won't match, so they can't lowball him and say, well, we'll sign him for six, because he's restricted. So, you know, they can't say, well, we'll give him $6 million a year. Portland will match that in a minute. You know, because that's what they're paying Wesley Matthews. You know what I'm saying? So they'll match $6 million a year in a minute. So it's going to have to be, you know, somewhere in the range of $8 to $10 million a year under the current CBA. Now, in the next deal, you know, if the owners get the rollbacks they want, you know, he might be looking at like a six to eight mil might be his max, you know, under a new CBA. But I think that's what he can get, you know, from a team. But I think those are some teams that, you know, could be interested. Hell, the Clippers could make a run for him. They have DeAndre Jordan, who's really athletic. You know, you put him in a center rotation of him and Odin. You know, if they can trade, you know, they can do a sign and trade with Chris Kaman and move Chris Kaman to Portland. You know, that will work out excellent for Portland. So they get a big back. He's a little bit older, yeah. But Kaman is solid when he's healthy. Same thing with Odin. You know what I'm saying? And actually Kaman is offensively light years ahead of Odin offensively. And he gives you, you know, he's going to give you good boards. He's going to block a few shots. Nothing amazing, but it's all solid. And you know what you're getting. So that would be another move if I'm Portland I would at least consider, depending upon what price, you know, you move Odin at. And if I'm the Clippers, I'd consider that because if you got a front line of, you know, Blake Griffin with Greg Oden and DeAndre Jordan behind him, that's a pretty formidable front line, you know. You know, Blake is going to get your buckets on offense, and then you got those two holding down the backs, getting rebounded on defense. And the Clippers got money to spend. They always got money to spend because Sterling's cheap. So those are some scenarios. You really can't put him in a situation where he's going to have to get up and down the court. So that's going to eliminate some of the, you know, faster-paced playing teams in the league. So, you know, and San Antonio is always in play. San Antonio, you know, he would be the perfect transition for Duncan. You know, just like Duncan helped David Robinson transition out, Odin could help Duncan transition out. You know, again, he's not the offensive force that Duncan was. Probably will never be that kind of a player, but defensively and on the boards, I still think his potential defensively and on the boards, even with the injuries, is, you know, he can be a 15 rebound, 2-block-a-game guy if he maxes out his potential, you know. And he, that's with the injuries. That's with the loss of the athleticism, you know, because it doesn't – to protect that 4-foot circle, it doesn't take a whole lot of athleticism. You know, you don't have to be the quickest guy getting side to side. And, again, he's 23.
Yeah.
He's 23. So – I still think that there's something there with Greg Oden. You know, I wasn't ever one of those people who thought he was going to be a Shaq or a Wilt type of center where you dump it into him and you get 20 points and 12 rebounds a night. I always said, with Oden, excuse me, his ceiling was going to be about 15 and 15. If he maxes out, he's going to give you 15 points, 15 rebounds, and, you know, two and a half to three blocks a night. And if you got that, then you had, you know, an excellent center, and possibly depending upon, you know, the impact he had on games, one of the all-time greats. But numbers-wise, you know, I never saw him as a 20-point-per-game guy, and I don't think the injuries are going to affect the areas where I think he's most valuable, which is defense and rebounding. So looking at it, exactly, there you have it. There you have it, RSG, baby. We hold it down. Looking at the back half of this draft, who out of the back half of the draft did you just think to yourself, who is that and why did he get picked in the first round? I got a couple.
Yeah. I looked at Shelvin Mack for Butler. I thought he was a first-round talent. Maybe I was just a little bit, I've been wooed a bit by his NCAA performances, but, you know, I saw a guy who handled the rock pretty well, pretty consistent shooter. He seemed to be a decent defender, but from what the analysts were saying, he doesn't have as much of an upside. You know, similar to what you were saying about Juwan Johnson, you know, how much can we look for this guy's game to evolve? And then there were some questions about his foot speed. But I tell you what, you put him in the right situation, he could be a player. I mean, at one point there were questions about Deron Williams' foot speed.
Right.
Know? And I think in the right situation, man, yeah. And all this is about situations. You know, getting in the program and the system and getting the opportunity to play and grow. But that's what it's all about. But I think you can put Shelvin Mack in the right situation, man. I mean, I can see him being a good pro. You know, looking back in this draft 10 years from now and saying, wow, this guy was drafted in the second round. You know, what was going on? How about for you?
Some of those second round guys who, you know, one guy who I really like is John Lewis, going to the Bucks. From Wisconsin, that's a guy for me who I thought was a first round pick. You know, he measured out to about 7 feet at the combine, which I thought was going to be a huge feather in his cap going into the draft because being able to do the things he could do as far as putting the ball on the floor, shooting from the perimeter, and being 7 feet tall, that's going to give him a huge advantage. I like him going to the Bucks. I think he could be a good complement to Bogut eventually. I think he's going to be in a system where he doesn't have to do a lot. He's going to be playing for a coach who's probably similar to a Bo Ryan as far as how defense is emphasized first and Scott Skiles. And he doesn't have a problem with that. You know, he doesn't have an aversion to defense. He played man-to-man defense in college. He wasn't hiding on the court. So, you know, his physical limitations on defense, there's going to be some physical limitations as far as foot speed and strength. He's got to get stronger. He's a better athlete than people give him credit for. But he's got to get stronger. I think that's his biggest thing is he's got to learn how to bang. He's a power forward, and the word power is in that position description for a reason. He's got to get stronger and be able to bang. But if he can bang, you know, he can have a long career, you know, as a stretch four in the NBA. So that's one guy who I think from the second round who's going to make an impact. Another guy is Malcolm Lee from UCLA. 6'6". Point guard, excellent, excellent defender, going to Chicago. I always like it when teams draft guys who fit with their identity. You know what I mean? Like, I like it when teams get guys who fit with what they're already doing. with, you know, Luer going to Milwaukee, defensive, he comes from a defensive-minded system, defensive-minded program in Wisconsin. He's disciplined with the ball. He knows how to make right decisions. He's a good decision maker. You know, lowest turnovers in the country. You know, he's played on a team with the lowest amount of turnovers in the country the last couple of years. He knows how to make decisions with the ball. You know, so he fits with what you're trying to do. Milwaukee's a methodical offensive team. They need help putting the ball in the basket. Not that he's necessarily going to help with that right away, but they hang their hat on defense. Chicago, similar type of team, hang their hat on defense. He gives them, Malcolm Lee gives Chicago a 6'6" guy who can come in, play the point, and they can play him at the same time with Derrick Rose because he's 6'6". So he can bring the ball up. He can take care of the point duties. They can move Rose off the ball, let him run off some screens or something. And then on defense, Rose can guard the point man, and he can shift over and guard the two man. And so that gives them some flexibility. And UCLA guys seem to always have better pro careers than they do in college. You look at the last 8 guys from UCLA who've gotten picked in the first round or in the early second round, and they've all turned out to be much better than where they were drafted. From Darren Collison, who was kind of an afterthought, Drew Holiday. You know, people thought he'd be all right. He had potential, but he's starting to realize some of that potential. You know, Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes was a late second round pick. He's had a nice NBA career. There are quite a few guys. Mbamute from Milwaukee, you know, second round pick. Nice career so far. So there are a lot of guys who, when they're at UCLA, don't look like world beaters. But when they get to the league, they have potential. And a lot of what I was hearing about Malcolm Lee was a lot of guys who are in the league, players, current players, active players, when they go out in the summer and they play pickup games in the Los Angeles area, he's one of the kids that they say, this guy's a pro player. This guy's an NBA player. And that carries weight for me because those guys know. When you're in the NBA and you're going against somebody else, you know if a guy can be in the league or not. And because you know what you face on a night-to-night basis. And so having that seal of approval from guys who are in the league also makes me really optimistic about that particular pick.
Yeah, I'm with you with Malcolm Lee. I always thought he was a pretty good player. Another guy along those lines is Charles Jenkins from Hofstra. I saw him play a couple times this year, and this joker can put the ball in the hole. I mean, he is a player. He talk about a scoring guard. I mean, he was just dominating the Colonial this season. And some people had him projected as an overall talent in terms of day one playing in the NBA. Some people had him in the top 15 in terms of players that are NBA ready right now. Now, there were some concerns about his size and, you know, how would he fit into, you know, being a two and a one's body. But man, they played one of his games on ESPN Classic about a week ago against VCU, and it was like an overtime game. I mean, this kid, he was unguardable. I mean, he made this VCU team that went to the Final Four look foolish trying to guard him. I mean, he found ways to get to the free throw line. Now, he is somewhat of a streaky shooter, but at the same time, he had a lot more freedom than the average player that got drafted last week had in their past programs. I mean, in order for this team to win, he needed to shoot the ball 20 times a game at least. And that's he seemed pretty happy doing it. But, I mean, he seemed to be a pretty solid player. So I'm interested to see how he's going to fit. He went to the Golden State program, and they got a lot of players out there at Golden State. I think they're going to make some moves. But I hope they keep him because I'm not quite sure what system Mark Jackson's going to have out there. I mean, he says he's going to keep it up and down. And if that's the case, I think Charles Jenkins could really fit in well into their system out there.
Yeah, I like Jenkins too. And I actually thought he would be a first-round pick as well, man. I thought he would squeeze into the bottom of the first round, maybe go to the Spurs. two big names went back to back, Zimmer and Kemba Walker. Kemba went 9, Zimmer Fredette went 10, Kemba to the Bobcats, Zimmer to the Kings. How do you feel about those two players' prospects going forward?
Well, I go back and forth with Kemba. You know, are we going to see a Ben Gordon? Are we going to see a John Bagley? Are we going to see a Vinnie Johnson? You know, I mean, are we going to see a Kemba? You know, somebody who redefines that scoring guard type of position? You know, because quite honestly, I can see Kemba being an Iverson. I mean, he's got that kind of talent to score. So I'm interested to see how he works in Charlotte because, I mean, they've already got Augustine. And as you know, when Felton was out there, you never saw Augustine and Felton play well together at the same time. You know, one would have a good game, one would have a bad game. So I'm interested to see what the Bobcats do out there. And Jimmer, I'm actually a Jimmer fan. I think he's going to be a solid pro. I think the Jimmer mania got him into the lottery. But I think, again, we look back 10 years from now, you know, I think we're going to take a step back and say, you know what, you know, Jimmer deserved to be in the lottery. So I think he'll be a good fit out there in Sacramento. What did you think about those two picks?
The Kimball pick, I like in the sense that that's a team. He's going to a team that needs a score. They need somebody to put the ball in the basket. They traded away Steven Jackson, who was their main money man. And we can talk about that trade in a minute. But they traded away Steven Jackson. They got Kemba. The thing that worries me about that combination, Kemba's going to bring some scoring. He's going to bring some moxie to the team. But the thing that bothers me about that is him and both him and Augustine are small. Those guys are little guards, so you really cannot play them together. You know, hopefully for Kemba, again, maybe he can fit into that Ben Gordon, Bobby Jackson kind of mold where he comes off the bench and he can light it up. Worst-case scenario, he turns into a Eddie House, you know, and he's going to have some games where he's going to snap out and then he's going to disappear for a while and then he'll have another game where he snaps out. You know, I just see a Tony Delk, Eddie House. You know, he could be anywhere from Eddie House, Tony Delk to, you know, Bobby Jackson or Ben Gordon as far as being a little man who could put the ball in the hole. And then Jimmer, I think Jimmer went to a good situation in Sacramento. They're not a real defensive-minded team, so his weaknesses aren't going to necessarily inhibit him from getting on the court. And then I think with Jimmer, I think what Sacramento wanted to do was they wanted to get either Jimmer or Kemba as a guy who could play and be effective without having a ball in his hands because they're going to have the ball in Tyreke Evans' hands most of the time. And with that, you need it. I mean, it's the same reason why Paxton and Kerr were great compliments for Mike, you know, and B.J. Armstrong. They were great compliments for Jordan because Jordan and Scottie were going to have the ball a lot on those teams and in those kind of offenses. And so you needed a point guard who could contribute without having the ball and who could contribute as a shooter. And I think that's the role that Jimmer's going to have to play, is that he's going to have to be a spot-up catch-and-shoot guy for a minute until his ball skills get better, until he proves he can beat guys off the dribble at this level. But he's going to have to be a complimentary guy. You know, nobody's thinking Jimmer's going to go out and lead the team in assists. That's not what Jimmer Fredette does. You know, so he can play the point guard position. He's going to be a constant blow-by, though, on defense if he's got to guard point. So, excuse me. That's where he's going to have a few issues. But I thought as far as offensive fit, they wanted to find a point guard who could shoot and didn't necessarily – they didn't need to him to be the initiator of offense to necessarily be effective. And, you know, Jimmer's a guy who can create his own shot. At least he was able to in college. Whether he can do that in the pros, we'll see. But he was able to create his own shot in college. So I think it's a good situation for him. Absolutely. I just think it's And part of it is Sacramento needed some buzz. They needed a name, and I think for them it was boiled down to him or Kemba. And if Zimmer was available, they were going to take Zimmer. If Kemba was available, they were going to take Kemba. But that franchise needed a buzz name to kind of create a rise and get people going and get people interested in Sacramento King basketball again. So, but the trade that they made, the trade didn't make any sense to me. Now that trade to me, I mean, they picked up Simmons, who I wasn't high on. I never really. Again, I'm always weary of dudes who have career years and contract seasons. That just never rubs me the right way. You know, I just ignore it. Like, don't pay that dude. Just don't. But teams always fall for it, and Simmons was one of those guys. He balled when he got to Milwaukee, had one of the best seasons of his career, and, of course, you know, the next year he got hurt. You know, that's not something he can necessarily control, but even when he was healthy, he just wasn't the same cat. He wasn't as dynamic. He wasn't as hungry. He wasn't as focused, which is the way it always works. So Milwaukee, you know, it was a three-team deal. Bobcats got the number 7 pick, which was Biombo and Corey Maggette. Milwaukee got the number 19 pick, which they got a pretty decent player in Tobias Harris, who I think will fit in nicely in Milwaukee. Steven Jackson, Sean Livingston. That's another guy who's kind of in that same category with me as Greg Oden, who I think, you know, if he gets with the right team, maybe he can turn it around, get his career back on track. He'll never be what he could have been, but I still think he can have it. He could be a serviceable point guard in this league. Then Beno Udrih, the Kings, they got the number 10 pick. So the Kings moved back and took home more money and probably got a worse player in John Salmons. So, I mean, Salmons will start for them. He'll probably start a small forward with Evans and maybe Fredette at the point. But ultimately, I mean, you know, I think Milwaukee came away pretty good. You know, Captain Jack, I think, will bring some attitude to that squad. He'll bring, you know, a caginess to that team that I think they need. He's a defensive-minded guy. I expect the Bucks to be back in the playoff hunt next year, health permitting.
Yeah, the Bucks are a really interesting squad. And, you know, I mean, say what you want to say about Steven Jackson, but, you know, he led the Bobcats, again, the Bobcats, the playoffs.
Say it again?
The Bobcats.
Right.
Okay, so I think there's something about him. You know, people don't like to hear this because, you know, he's a little crazy. But he's a winner, man. He's a winner. He knows how to push guys. He knows how to lead. And, you know, I think Milwaukee needs a little bit about that. Now, I don't know if Captain Jack's going to stay in Milwaukee. I don't think he was very excited about going. But we'll see how that situation plays out. But if he stays, I mean, with the Brandon Jennings and then, you know, to me, I think the Bucks, you know, as Bogey goes, the Bucks go, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I agree. When he's healthy, they're in it. When he's not healthy and not playing well, they don't really stand a chance.
You know, and I challenge any of our listeners, you know, look at Bogey's numbers. I mean, his numbers put him in the top, you know, in that top half of centers in the league. And defensively, I mean, a lot of guys don't know. I mean, this guy that leads or is one of the leaders in block shots every year. So, I mean, when he plays, I mean, he really anchors that defense. And, again, with Captain Jack into the mix, I could see the Bucks surpassing the Hawks or the Magic, you know, for that 4 or 5 seed next year.
Yeah, I can see that happening pretty easily. I can definitely see them moving past, you know, the Hawks or in Orlando into that 5 seed. That's where I thought they would be this year. Things just didn't work out. A lot of guys got hurt. The depth that they thought they picked up in the offseason just wasn't allowed to be what it could have been, which was, you know, the depth. And they had trouble putting the ball in the hole. I also like the deal for Charlotte. You know, they got Corey Maggette back. And Corey Maggette is an enigma in the truest sense, where dude's got the physical gifts, But he just has never been able to, I mean, he just ain't never been able to get it going. And when the situation is right for him, I mean, if he could have figured out how to do what he's done, you know, for the Clippers and for some of these lesser teams that he's played for last year in Milwaukee, and they could have won some games and gotten to the playoffs, he could have raised his star so high. But it just is never there with him. It just is never there when it needs to be. When nobody's looking, he giving you 20 and 5. You know, 20 points and 5 rebounds, shooting 84% from the line, getting to the line 8-9 times a game when ain't nobody looking. But the minute, you know, people are watching and this cat disappears a little bit. So, I mean, they got him. He's got a couple years left on a bad contract. I think they're just going to ride that out, but they were able to get Biombo and Kemba, which I think they'll take, you know, if you're looking at what they came away with from this draft. Another trade that went down that I think was probably the most interesting trade of the night was the Blazers-Nuggets-Mavs trade, where the Blazers got Raymond Felton and then the rights to Dallas's number 57 overall pick. I don't know who that wound up being. But and then Andre Miller and the rights to – the Nuggets got Andre Miller and the rights to Jordan Hamilton and a future second-round pick. And then the Mavs, for just being involved, they just let's give the Mavs another player because they're already good. They got Rudy Fernandez. So,
yeah.
To me, that was a nice pickup for all teams involved, in my opinion. For the Nuggets
– yeah, I mean, I think Rudy Fernandez, like, he really needs a change of scenery. And,
yeah.
You know, I think he'd be a nice insurance policy for the whole Caron Butler situation in terms of how that plays out.
Because yeah, and Deshaun Stevenson is going to be a free agent, too, also this year.
Okay.
So those are a couple guys. Stevenson, Chandler, Caron Butler are all going to be free agents. And even if they let they're probably gonna let Stevenson walk now. So this is probably Stevenson's walking favorites. As integral as he was to them winning the title, this is probably a wrap for Stevenson with Fernandez coming in because he's probably gonna start at the 2 next year. That makes that team a bit scary to me. You know, if they can get Butler back and you know have him split minutes at the 3 with Marion, you know they get Chandler back. Or they bring in another big man who's serviceable, you know, so they get Chandler back in the fold. And now you got a starting lineup of Kidd, Fernandez, Butler, or Marion, whoever's starting, Dirk, and Chandler. That lineup is better than what they had out there this year. Because the thing that Fernandez will do is he'll play D. Rudy will play D. He may not be as good defensively as Stevenson, but he's close. And the thing that Rudy does that Stevenson doesn't do is Rudy can play offense on the other end. Rudy can score. Rudy's going to score. Rudy's creative. He can create his own shot. He can get his own shot. So now you add another guy who created his own shot to a team and I think Rudy's going to fit in. Rudy's going to enjoy being in Dallas because it's a bigger market than Portland. I think that's a big deal for foreign guys as much as it is for homegrown talent. Being in a bigger market, being in a place where it seems like, you know, there's a little bit more glitz. I think, especially the guys from Spain, they like that because, you know, quiet as kept, basketball is pretty big over there. It's not as big as soccer, that's for sure. But in Spain, basketball is pretty big. And some of those Spanish guys look for that when they come over here to the league. For Portland, I think it was a solid deal. You know, they got Ray Felton, who I think just really upgraded their whole situation. Felton was a nice player last year, had a nice season playing for the Knicks, and then continued a nice season playing for the Nuggets. And I think, you know, he's definitely an upgrade, a significant upgrade over Andre Miller, who at this point in his career is just limited in his – Andre Miller's entering that Sam Cassell twilight stage of his career where he's still serviceable, he's still effective – but he does things at a methodical, crafty, you know, cagey pace. You know, he's not in a rush. He's not a beat point guard. But Felton is. Felton can get it up and down the court. But Felton can also play half-court ball. He proved that when he was in Charlotte under Larry Brown, when he was on that playoff team there. So he can play in multiple styles. And he's last year he was an effective shooter. He probably had his best season of his career. And that was after he got paid. So that's a good sign. You know, when a guy steps up and has a nice statistical season after getting paid, that's a good sign. So I like that for Portland. And again, for Denver, they got Andre Miller, who now they can hand over the reins to Ty Lawson and let him do his thing. They got the right to Jordan Hamilton, who's a player I liked in this draft. And then they picked up Kenneth Faried, who's another player I liked in this draft. So, I mean, they basically got Andre Miller and two more players that are probably going to get some type of tick. And you add that to an already loaded team as far as depth goes, and now a deep team got deeper. You know, and all they had to give up was one guy, one rotation guy, and they got a rotation guy back plus two prospects. So I think that trade was a win-win for everybody. It really was.
Yeah, I overlooked the Rudy Fernandez part, but you make some really quality points there. Dallas is trying to get better.
Right.
They know that some of the teams they're going to be facing, you know, they know that Los Angeles is trying to make some moves. You know, the Lakers, they're trying to get better. They know the Heat is going to have another year underneath their belt. So
the Spurs put in a sneaky move, too.
Who?
The Spurs, picking up Kawhi Leonard. They traded George Hill for Kawhi Leonard. That was a sneaky one. That was one of those moves where, you know, he could have that kind of Tayshaun Prince type impact for a veteran team that Tayshaun had, you know, for those Pistons fans. I didn't mean to confuse the Pistons for the Celtics. I know that doesn't go over too well in a D. But you know, he can play a similar role as far as bringing some athleticism and some energy. And by all accounts, that's what he's about is, you know, he's an energy player. You don't have to run a lot of plays for him. You don't need to feed the ball through him. And he has upside to become more. So for the Spurs, that's a good investment. You know, low risk, high reward. They had to give up a guy who they had invested a lot in George Hill. But it was getting to a point where his rookie deal was about to be up, and eventually they were going to have to pay him. And unless they were going to move Tony Parker, they wasn't going to pay him. So, I mean, they got something for him, another rookie contract. They can take 3 years, see what Leonard turns into, and either keep him or dump him at that point.
Yeah, I like Leonard. You put Leonard with a jump shot, you know, you may be looking at a young Scottie Pippen. So I like Leonard. I like his game a lot. I actually think that he's going to be, you know, one of the best players. Like, he's going to have one of the better careers out of all the guys that were drafted. You know?
And if he does, again, the Spurs are going to look like geniuses.
Yeah.
So, and you know, there were some other notable trades that he picked up a nice piece in Norris Cole, rookie from Cleveland State. This draft, again, there are a lot of guys who are going to be contributors for quite some time in the NBA, just no stars. I don't think there's a star power in this draft. Again, Derek Williams will be a solid player for, you know, 10 years plus. Kyrie Irving will be a solid player for 10 years plus. I would be surprised if either of them made an all-star team, though. That's just the way I see this draft playing out. You know, there are a lot of guys who are going to be glue guys for franchises, and I think the GMs realize that. You know, as I'm looking and I see the Knicks taking a guy like Iman Shumpert, you know, they took him – something like number 16 or number 17 with the 17th pick. They took Iman Shumpert. And, I mean, basically, he's a big point guard who's a defender. And that's got value, but not at number 17. But I think they realize they need some role players. They need some defenders. And all you're going to get out of this draft anyway is role players. So why not take a role player who's going to give you something that you – why not take a guy who you know what you're going to get as far as him being a role player? You know, you could gamble on a Euro or you could gamble on a young guy who's unproven, but take a guy with a proven NBA skill and plug him in and have him play that role. And I think that's the philosophy that a lot of GMs were taking with this particular group. You know, when when Klay Thompson was taken 11 by the Warriors, They needed a big guard who could shoot. You know, Klay Thompson's probably not going to be a star in this league, but that's what they needed in that moment. So a lot of teams would seem as if they went with started addressing need as best they could. So, I mean, I think, again, we look back on this draft in 3 or 4 years and say that there were some good players who came out, some solid role players, and there are probably going to be 4 or 5 guys from this draft who play, you know, well into their 30s, have great careers. There are going to probably be some guys we never hear from again. And then, you know, to me, the guy with the most potential out of this draft was Kanter. I think he has the most potential to be an all-star simply because he plays center. And if I was going to bet money on anybody being an all-star, it would be at the center position because right now that is the thinnest position in the league. A point guard and a power forward, good luck with that because it ain't enough of them around, right?
From a sentimental standpoint, it was kind of cool to see the Morris brothers get drafted back to back. That was kind of neat, you know, especially somebody who has a brother. I'm sure you can relate, man. That just had to be a special moment between those two, man. And it was a joy to kind of watch it, to see how everything unfolded. You know?
Yeah, man, it was. It was. It really was, man. I mean, you hit it on the head. Anybody that's had a brother, you know, you and your brother talked about, man, that day when we get drafted to the league, or whether it's football, basketball, you know, baseball, whatever sport you play, if you had a brother, you both sat down and had those conversations. If we get drafted, what are we going to do with all our money? What kind of house are we going to buy our mama? What kind of cars are we going to get? And now they can live that, man, which is, you know, sometimes those kind of stories get lost in all of the skill set talk and fit and money. But, you know, dreams were made last Thursday. You know, these guys have been dreaming about this since they picked up a basketball, you know, just like you and I did with whatever sport we played. You know, we go out in the backyard or in front of the house in the driveway, and everybody's hitting that shot for that team that they want to play on. And now they get to do that. And that's a beautiful thing. No matter how it turns out, they can always say, I got drafted, you know, to the NBA, and I played in the league. And that's something that no one can take from them. It's an accomplishment in itself. So kudos to all the draftees, man.
Absolutely.
So next, what we're going to get into, we're going to talk a little bit. Oh, man, one more piece on the NBA, and we'll move on to talking some NFL talk in the last half hour. Ron Artest. Under the radar. Man, I saw it come across the wire, man. I'm like, man, come on, Ron.
please tell the listeners what this cat did.
Listeners, man, if you are not aware, Ron Artest changed his name. And I'm sure you're running off things in your head of possible options. Ron chose Meta World Peace. So he went all World Be Free on us, man. It's just killing me, man. I was like, man, this dude did not change his name to Meta World Peace. I listened to an interview with him trying to explain it, and I felt dumber afterwards. I'm sorry.
You know, in the word meta, you know, my GRE days of memorizing all these words, the word meta means love, kindness, friendliness, goodwill. And then Ron throws world peace after. So, you know, I just shook my head 3 or 4 times.
Man, that's about all you can do, man, is shake your head. That's about all you can do is shake your head, man, and be like, are you serious, brother? Are you serious?
Sure,
you
Phil
got
Jackson.
To be kidding me.
I'm sure Phil Jackson saw that and was just like, you know, that's why I retired.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, yeah. Phil had to be sitting somewhere like, yeah, I made the right decision. I made it. I don't need to put up with that.
That's right.
But I tell you what, I think next year, man, with Phil leaving, whatever whammy magic Phil had on Ron is gone. And Mike Brown's going to have his hands full next year with that brother. Because they're going to be in it, but not quite in it. You know, hopefully Kobe's going to be back practicing and keep them cats focused. Because that was a piece of the whole Lakers situation that I wasn't aware of, that Kobe wasn't practicing all season. And, you know, he wasn't pushing those cats. When you're not getting pushed like that, it's like if Mike don't practice. Practices would be very different. It's just a very different tone and vibe when your number one guy isn't practicing. And when you're talking about practice, not the game.
Come on, practice.
Not the game. Classic AI, man. Classic AI. We talking about practice. I'm supposed to be a franchise player, and we sitting here talking about practice.
Practice.
Classic AI. Shout out to AI, man, wherever you at, man. He's probably burning down some casino right now. But, yeah, you know, when Kobe's not in practice, I mean, the intensity level drops, and that's why you get those ebbs and flows in play that they had throughout the season, which I think explains a little bit of why they collapsed as down the stretch. But that's neither here nor there. So, yeah, man, Ron changed his name to Metta World Peace. I think we're going to get more crazy Ron next year. Maybe he fired his therapist. We're going to see, man. You know, we're going to see. We're going to see how that plays out. So, man, the lockout. NFL. Looks like we're on the verge of some kind of progress. I still don't quite know what to make of it, but, you know, there's something there. Again, it looks like the teams are starting to come to the table and the players are giving on the money a little bit. It's getting close to the 11th hour. Decisions are going to need to be made. People are going to need to bite the bullet. Compromises are going to need to happen. So it's getting down to the wire because, you know, as we get closer to July, July is when things start to move. You know, that's when I start doing my fantasy mock drafts. Yeah, July 4th weekend, I start doing them fantasy mock drafts, you know, real hard in a normal year. I'm not going to do them this year because I'm kind of just going to sit and wait. But in a normal year, that's kind of my cycle. That's kind of my training cycle. You know, I take the winter off, do my fantasy basketball, you know, and then once basketball is over, playoffs, June comes, and, you know, I kind of take some time off from the fantasy world, and then I get back into it. Start working on my lather around, you know, after the fourth. Then I hit it hard, you know, with the mock draft scene, you know, get out there, get some practice reps, get my skills sharp, you know, start to map out my draft board, get my war room set up for the fantasy football season. You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
But this year, you know, it's going to be different because of the lockout. But with that, you know, if they start to cut into July, then they're going to start to miss games. You know, first games are usually played that second weekend of August. I know I have a family reunion that day. I remember as a kid, I always was conflicted about going to the family reunion. I loved the family reunion. It was a great time. I enjoyed seeing my family. But the Hall of Fame game was always the same day. And I wanted to get it. Who's winning the Hall of Fame game is all I wanted to know. You know, catch a little bit of it because, you know, it's that first little bit of taste of NFL football. And even though, you know, the starters are in there for about a series or two, it's still football.
Yeah.
It's still NFL football, you know. And you still want to just catch that glimpse of the starters because you know the season's coming. And so as we get closer to that, to those July dates, man, you know, they're under the gun right now. They need to get a deal done, or else they're going to start to miss time. And when you miss time, you miss money. And I know as much as the players are going to be missing those game checks, the owners are going to be missing all that revenue that comes through from those preseason games. Because the players don't get paid the same for preseason games. The owners make the same money they do for preseason games that they do for regular season games. So those games count just as much as the players probably could give a few preseason games and be like, cool, whatever. We'll give him a few weeks of training camp.
Cool.
You know what I mean? We'll live with that. We'll work that out. But the owners, you know, I think, you know, this is the time where the owners are going to sweat a little bit harder than the players. And then as it starts to get close to losing some regular season games, that's when the players are really going to get, you know, they're going to get a little tight in the draws. Because that's when they start. That's when their finances start to change a little bit.
Yeah, I'm getting to the point where I'm just kind of, I won't say fed up, but I'm just kind of tired of this labor stuff. You know, I mean, it's going on it's going on 4 months, you know, and, you know, I said this last week, I think the best thing the NBA can do is get this thing figured out while the NFL is still struggling over it. You know, get this labor situation figured out in the NBA. So when the naysayers come out and say the NBA is a bunch of prima donnas and all this kind of stuff, they can take a step back and say, you know what, we got our labor thing figured out pretty quick compared to football. So, I mean, I'm just – all this posturing and all this, well, it looks like they're coming close. Let me know when there's a deal.
Right.
Okay. Let me know when there's a deal. I mean, I'm encouraged that other people seem to be encouraged that things are going in the right direction. But at the end of the day, I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to it.
No, I agree, man. That's where I'm at with the whole process as well. I haven't really been following. I mean, there's been nothing to follow as far as the progress, really. There's nothing I can really understand. I mean, they might as well be writing it in Chinese. With all this legalese and stuff. It's just something that I'm really not very well adept at navigating. I try and get the general gist of what's going on and what's out there and then move on. The details I can't really get into. But other than that, man, it's not really fun. Right now I should be speculating on which third string halfback has the best chance of being a sleeper. That's what I need to be thinking about right now, and I don't get to think about that. I don't get to think about, you know, which wide receiver is going to be getting more receptions this year. I don't get to think about who's going to break out this year. You know, which tight end who's going to be the next Antonio Gates? You know, the tight end that comes out of nowhere and has a great season. Which QB is ready to take that next step and become an upper echelon QB? Those are the types of things I want to think about in June and July. And you're right. You're absolutely right. If the NBA can figure this whole labor thing out, not only would they be able to put that feather in their cap that, hey, look, you know, y'all want to call us spoiled prima donnas, but we figured out our labor deal pretty quick, they would actually have an off season, which is what probably is where the NFL has lost people. And the NFL, I think, underestimated the importance of the off season and keeping the fan engaged, you know, and keeping the fan connected to what's going on with their team. And I think, you know, a couple weeks ago a report came out that Goodell was kind of surprised at the lack of traffic to NFL team sites and the NFL homepage and NFL sites on ESPN and SI.com. And it's because why would I want to go? I think they thought that people would continue to pay attention out of habit, but there's nothing to engage people. And when people aren't engaged, they look for other stuff. Especially when you have as interesting an NBA season as you had, you know, you just have a lot of other things going on. Baseball's getting going. And so when you don't have that hot stove season that the NFL usually has, it takes a lot of luster. And fans disengage. It allows fans an opportunity to kind of check out. And they have. I mean, nobody wants to hear about this. You know, ESPN is putting up stories all the time talking about, you know, who's the best wide receiver in the game, who's the best. I really don't care unless they're going to be playing, you know. I don't want to project, you know, who's the best tight end or talk about who's the best inside linebacker unless I know I'm going to be watching something, unless it's going to be something to watch or there's some player moving to track, you know. And, again, the NBA would be best served to figure this out so that they can have a traditional offseason and then people can talk about. Because, I mean, last offseason for the NBA, was great because it set up the season perfectly. And when you don't have that off season to set up your season, you lose that intrigue. You lose those stories. You don't develop those storylines that people can follow throughout the season. You know, how is this new free agent going to fit in with their new team? How is this trade going to work out? You know, how are these rookies going to fit in? All those kind of storylines that happen and are built up over the summer aren't happening right now for the NFL. And it may not have a tremendous impact on revenue and ratings, but I think it will have an impact on on their ability to get people in towns where their team may not necessarily be playing great football to stay engaged. You know, what you may see, again, across the board, you're not going to see people just checking out, not paying attention to football. But maybe if you're a Buffalo Bill fan and the Bills come out the gates and they're not winning right away, you might check out of the season a little bit early because you haven't invested yourself into it in 7-8 months at that point. You know, if you're a fan of, you know, the Cleveland Browns or who else sucks right now? Detroit will be better. But, you know, if you're a fan of a team that's horrible and you know your team's going to be bad this year and they come out the gate and they go 0-6, 0-7, it's a wrap. I mean, you haven't built up that momentum of anticipating the season. You don't have those storylines that you want to follow. And you're not familiar, again, you're not familiar with that six-round draft pick where you want to see, okay, is this kid going to be something in the future? Let me continue to watch as they start to integrate this kid into the lineup. Let me watch this fourth-round linebacker and see where he becomes because, you know, we don't need him next year or whatever. You haven't built up that interest because you haven't been following your team like that. You haven't had OTAs to look at. You haven't had fodder from training camp practice to read about, oh, so-and-so is looking great in training camp. You know, that's the type of stuff that I read. You know, and I don't even have a favorite football team, so I read about every team. You know, who's looking good in training camp? Who's looking good during the rookie days? You look at those things, you know, and then as the season goes on, you go back and check up on those guys and see how they're doing, you know. And for me, as a guy who doesn't really have a team that I necessarily pull for, it takes away from that enjoyment that that's part of the enjoyment is getting engaged over that summer, and the NFL's kind of lost that. And I totally agree with you. If the NBA can get their labor deal done as swiftly as possible and have some sort of offseason, it's going to give them a huge advantage, at least over this next coming season. Again, the NFL's going to bounce back. I have no doubt about that. I think this first year is going to be rough. They may get hit at the gates. For the backlash, I think that'll be where you see most backlash is in those towns where, in those cities where their team isn't involved in a race or their team isn't playing well, folks ain't going to show up to the games. They'll still watch on TV. TV revenue will still come in. So it won't hurt them in that way. It'll hurt them at the gate. I think that's where you're going to – because the NFL tickets are expensive anyway. But I think that's where you're going to see the biggest impact. And, again, it's not going to be earth-shattering. It may not even be significant. But I think it'll be worth knowing. I totally agree with you, man. I've checked out on it. I don't follow. I haven't even begun to look at like fantasy projections or none of that yet, man. And usually I'm chomping at the bit to look at those kind of things, and yeah, just not really interested.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that, the NFL Network's doing the top 100 players. If it wasn't for that. I wouldn't be watching anything related to NFL right now, man.
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily out of protest. Like, I'm not protesting the NFL by any means. It's not interesting to me. Labor talks is not interesting to me, you know. And I would imagine you probably fall into that same category. This is not a political statement, me not paying attention to it. I just haven't been compelled to pay attention to it. And I think that in itself says a lot.
Absolutely.
So, you know, hopefully the NFL figures it out. Hopefully, you know, they can, you know, get everything where it needs to be so that there can be a season next year. And no other time is missed. They can have some sort of free agent period. You know, hopefully that works out, man. Now, you know, so that's a little bit of NFL talk. Well, actually, one more thing. T.O., for the listeners out there, Terrell Owens tore his ACL in an undisclosed accident. My guess is he was hooping. He's a ball. He likes to play basketball in all season. My guess, he's either hooping or he slipped on some Cavassier or some Amaretta or something while he was hanging out with some of the honeys on a shoot or one of his VH1 shows, slipped, torqued his knee the wrong way, popped his ACL. Right. It'd be like that sometimes, man. You're trying to be an international superstar. Stuff like that happens.
Right.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, T.O.'s 37. Now, T.O. is probably, you know, one of the greatest athletes ever, one of the greatest physically built human beings ever. But at the same time, he's 37, and the ACL ain't no joke, especially popping the ACL. It ain't no joke. You think it's a wrap for T.O.?
I hate to root against him, man. I really do. I am and I've always been a T.O. fan. You know, I just I guess I think he's misunderstood. But I've always been a fan of him, man, and I haven't been a fan of the way he's went about things in terms of being a distraction in the locker room at times. But in terms of his overall talent, man, and his passion to the game, I've always been a fan of him. I think if there is somebody who can come back, I think it's him. You know, when I think of T.O., I think of Ray Allen. You know, I think of a guy who, you know, is in his mid to late 30s. He's still playing at a high level, even though, you know, history has told us that you know, guys, especially in the NBA and NFL, once they get older, their play is going to decline. And, you know, I mean, looking at Ray Allen, he's made a lot of smart decisions in terms of, you know, diet and workout. And, you know, and T.O.'s done a lot of the same things. So, you know, I'm kind of like Chris Carter, who was on the other day. And Chris Carter said, you know, I think it's a tough situation. Logically, nobody comes back from it at that age. But I don't feel comfortable rooting against T.O. So I don't think he's done. I think he's going to come back and be a contributor to a team. I just hope he comes back sooner than later, but he comes back when he's ready. You know, initial projections were saying that he won't be back until November, December. Well, of course, his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, comes out today saying, oh, T.O., he should be ready in August. So, you know, I just hope he comes back when he's ready, man.
Yeah, man, Drew Rosenhaus is something else, man. I tell you what, though, if I'm a player, I definitely want him going to bat. I definitely want him on my team, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm interested to see, you know, he's taken over Pryor out of Ohio State, and, you know, he's got his Gruden special coming on later on in the week, and I'm interested to see how this whole Terrell Pryor situation plays out. You know, I'm sure we'll talk about it in the coming weeks, but that's another guy I'm rooting for, man. I'm rooting for Terrell Pryor.
Yeah, I think it's going to take him switching positions. I think he has more potential as a wideout than he does as a QB, in my opinion. And I think he's going to get more looks. If he goes to wideout, I think more teams will be willing to take that shot on him if they think he's willing to play wideout. I think that's gonna give him the best chance to latch on at the next level. But yeah, you know, I always hate to see a guy get scapegoated, especially, you know, throughout this whole bogus college sports system where they exploit kids. You know, I hate to see a guy get demonized just trying to get some when everybody else is getting some. You know. I get why, you know, I get there's a certain downside to it, but, you know, I kind of feel a little bad for him, Terrell Pryor. And I do want to see him be successful because I think he's a super talented kid. And honestly, I really hate to see supreme talents not maximize what they got. You know what I mean? He's one of those guys who is a unique talent. And I hate to see guys who are that talented not maximize it. But what I want to get into now is our weekly segment of old school versus new school, where we take an old school NBA player and compare their game to a new school NBA player. This is education on the fly, all right? We're going to educate you. You're going to get some history. You're going to get some culture. You know, you need to learn a little bit about this game that we love to talk about, which is the NBA. I'm going to let my man D. Newell set it up with the catch we got. We're going to be looking at this week, and we're going to get into it. So go ahead, man, set it up.
Well, for our old school, new school NBA conversation, we've got Clyde the Glide Drexler representing the old school group. And we're putting him head-to-head against the new school player of Dwayne Wade. Just some historical background, you know, and again, we're looking at picking players that have similar styles. Statistically, they're pretty close, but they played in different eras. And at the end of the conversation or at the end of the day, you know, we're really trying to make a definitive answer or opinion in case of why we think one player was ultimately the better player than the other player, regardless of the generation and the era they played in. So looking at Clyde Drexler, he played 14 years, mostly in Portland, but his last three and a half years he played in Houston. He's a 20-point scorer. He averaged 6 rebounds a game, 5.5 assists a game, and 2 steals per game. A 31% three-point shooter, and he won one championship ring with the Houston Rockets in 94-95 when I believe they beat Orlando that year. Dwayne Wade, obviously, is in the middle of his career. He's played 7 full seasons. He's averaged 25 points a game, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, and just a hair under 2 steals per game. He, too, is right around the same where Drexler was at. He's at about 29% at the three-point shooter for his career. And, again, both these guys are 47-48% field goal shooters throughout their career. Now, a couple of noticeable differences here is Clyde Drexler, he came off the bench his entire first year, and the majority of his first 3 years in the league, he was a 6-man. He started half his games the second and third year, where Dwayne Wade came in and was kind of the man on his team from day one. So in some ways, Drexler, his average of 20 a game throughout his career is pretty true because for the most part, he had a couple of seasons he scored 27, but for the most part, he averaged right around 20, 21, 22 throughout his career. So I'll kick it to you first, man.
When Phil rolled this out to us, Earlier in the day and said that we were going to be comparing two guys, I got really excited because these are two guys who I really enjoy watching playing. Not so much this year with D-Wade. I still enjoy watching him on the court, but it's just the off-the-court stuff and the personality flaws that come to light that I just can't jive with. But that's neither here nor there. Clyde was one of my favorite guys to watch as a kid. Always appreciated the gracefulness of Clyde. Clyde had the little two-legged kick jump shot. You know, Clyde had a lot of flavor to his game. He had a lot of style to his game. Clyde was a both ends of the court player. I mean, he had a nice pull-up jumper, but he could also get to the rack, and he used those very well to play off of each other. I would say Clyde is a better jump shooter than D-Wade. To me, Clyde strikes me as a better shooter overall in D-Wade. I think that's one area D-Wade needs to continue to improve. He's gotten a lot better over his career, but I think he needs to continue to improve on his perimeter shooting. D-Wade is what I like to call a shot maker, where he's one of those guys that, you know, earlier in the game, his numbers may not say that that's a good shot for him to take, but there are going to be certain times where his team needs the bucket and he's going to hit that shot, and that's the shot that you want him to take. It's going to be the shot that you try to get him to take, and he's going to make it, and there's not going to be a whole lot you can do about it. And that's what shot makers do. You know, they make shots when they need to make shots. It may not be the best shot. It actually may be the shot that you wanted them to take as a defender, but they made it. You know, Clyde always struck me as a winner. Always, you know, his teams were always in the mix, always in the thick of things. He played on some great Portland teams. D-Wade has been the same way. When he's had quality players around him, his teams have always been in the mix. From his first couple of years when it was Caron Butler and Lamar Odom and D-Wade, and they pushed into the they made that push into the playoffs those first couple of years in Miami before they traded Odom and those guys. Then when they got Shaq, you know, they kept you know, he pushed them forward and they won a championship. And as long as he's had talent, his team has been in the mix in the East. Even last year when he was rolling pretty much solo, you know, he got his team into the playoffs and, you know, he gave Boston everything he could. You know, that's how a superstar goes out. He gave Boston, I mean, he emptied his clip against Boston. He gave them everything he had, and he was sitting there firing a blank firearm, you know, when it was all over. So, you know, I hate to say it, but I think Clyde was good at attacking the basket, but I think D-Wade is amazing at attacking the basket. The way D-Wade attacks the basket, you're either fouling him or getting, or he's going to finish. It's either foul or finish with D-Wade. And he's not as big as Clyde, so I think that's what makes it just as amazing. I think, and I may be overstating this, because at that age I wasn't really keyed into the game as I am now, but I think I would say D-Wade may be a better defender, slightly, not a whole lot, slightly better defender than Clyde. Clyde had excellent length, and he had good quickness. D-Wade is strong. I think he's a little bit more solidly built than Clyde was. I think they probably weigh about the same. If not, he may have a few pounds on Clyde, even though Clyde was taller. D-Wade is strong, is a little bit stronger, so I think that allows him to do some things defensively as far as being physical with his opponent that maybe Clyde couldn't do defensively. It allows him to maintain an established position. You know, and also, Clyde played back in the days when you could put your hands on people. I think D-Wade would be an amazing defender if he could put his hands on people, as would LeBron. But, you know, I think D-Wade would be awesome if he could put his hands on people. But the fact that he can and he still shuts guys down, you know, he's a demon in the pass lane, great acceleration. You know, this is a real tough one, man. Because both of them have areas where they're strong and the other one is not as strong. You know, they're both strong across the board. And it's like splitting hairs, man. So that's how I see it, man.
Clyde made the All-NBA team five times. He was a first-team selection in 92 and a second-team selection two other times in his career. A lot of people forget, but he was on that dream team, that 1992 Olympic team.
Yep.
And one of the things that really sticks out to me is Clyde's last year, he averaged 18 points a game, 5 assists, and 5 rebounds. You know, right along the line of his career average. So when Clyde decided to hang it up, he hung it up. You know, one of the things I think that Clyde has to his credit is his college career. Now, Dwayne Wade had a heck of a career at Marquette, and he brought a program that hadn't been to the Final Four in decades, you know, to the Final Four. They had a really nice run. But a lot of people forget, you know, Clyde's originally, you know, I think he was born somewhere in Louisiana, New Orleans, somewhere around there. But he played, you know, like he grew up in Houston. You know, he played high school ball in Houston, and he stayed home, and he played college ball at Houston with Olajuwon. You know, five slamma jamma, they were called. And for the younger listeners out there that may be in our age group, you know, a lot of us remember how exciting that UNLV team was, you know, in the 90s with Larry Johnson, Stacey Ogman, or even the Fab Five in the early 90s with Weber and Juwan Howard and Jalen Rose and the rest of those guys. Five Slamma Jamma was more exciting than both those teams, in my opinion. I mean... They got up and down. I believe they lost twice in the finals. I don't think they ever won a championship. I know they lost to that NC State team in 83. that I believe that they lost to Georgetown as well. Clyde may have already went to the NBA at that point, but Olajuwon was on that team. And so, you know, from that standpoint, you know, Clyde came in, he was an early pick, and, you know, for me, when I look at these two players, I like, they are clearly the, you can find these two guys as slashers. You know, both their games are defined by getting in the open court or finding creases, moving without the ball, one-on-one. I mean, they are the classic slashers. And so, game changer, let me ask you this. You know, if we were to give them video game ratings, 0 to 99, and slashing was a category, you know, what number would you give both these guys individually?
Again, strictly on slashing, I would probably give them both about a 96. And why I would give them both about a 96, where Clyde had grace and kind of the aerial artistry, D-Wade has power. And I think Clyde could have displayed more power and D-Wade could display more artistry. So they're not perfect in that sense. Like when I think of – so what I'm basing it off of is if I were to give a guy an all-time – who's my all-time slasher? It would probably be Dr. J. Because Doc could go power on you or Doc can go, you know, artistry on you. It would be Doc and then Dominique. Those are probably my top two all-time slashers. I never got to see a guy like Elgin Baylor play, but from everything that I've heard is that he would probably be in that mix also. And so those are my 99s. So in comparing those two to my 99s, where would I put them in comparison to those 99s? I'll probably give them both about a 96 as far as slashing goes. And again, when I'm looking at a slash, I'm looking at a guy who can finger roll on you just as quickly as they can take it up on you two hands. You know, they can come down the lane and, you know, hit a windmill on you, or they can cradle it and lay it up, you know what I'm saying, in the same sense. So those are kind of – so, yeah, I would say 96 for both of them.
Yeah. See – And I like the way you laid that out. I like the way you put the 99s out there. Because I agree with you when you look at Doc and you look at Dominique. You know, the thing with Clyde is Clyde played around a lot of really good players, where Dwayne Wade really hasn't had that, with the exception of, you know, the year they won the championship. But even then, I mean, he had to score 27, 30 a game for them to really have a chance. And then this year, of course, with LeBron and Bosch, he's had a lot around him. But Clyde, you know, I think his numbers, if he was playing in today's game, his numbers would be inflated a lot more than his 20 points per game for a couple of reasons. First, as you mentioned earlier, Marcus, I mean, the defensive rules are just a lot different now. You know, Clyde would get to the line probably 3 or 4 or 5 times more than he did during his playing days, when they were allowed to hand check. They were allowed to do a lot of different things that if he was playing today, defenders cannot do that to slow him down. Second of all, he had a really good mid-range game. You know, obviously his three-point numbers, I mean, kind of like Dwayne Wade, you have to respect his three-point shooting ability, but that's not, you know, that was not the strength of his game. I mean, Clyde from 17 to 20, I mean, he was like butter. You know, I mean, he had such a dependable shot from there. And then the third thing is, Clyde played with a really good host of players. You know, you think about a Terry Porter. You think about a young Kevin Duckworth. You know, a guy like Buck Williams, Kersey. He played with some really good players. You know, Kiki Vanderway, that that took away from his numbers a little bit because they had such a balanced team. And he didn't need to put up, you know, the 25, 30 points a game, although I think he had the ability to do so if he needed to. You know, and then we see him later on in his career. He went to Houston, and he blended in excellent with Olajuwon. He was a perfect complement out there in Houston. So for me, I'm a huge Dwayne Wade fan. But again, I was a Pistons fan growing up. So a lot of times, you know, I was a Pistons fan, then I kind of turned into a Michael Jordan fan. And, you know, those Portland teams, they played the Pistons tough. You know, they played them tough in the 89-90 finals, as well as a couple years later they played against the Bulls as well. So I wasn't the biggest Drexler fan, but honestly, I think he's a little bit better player than Dwayne Wade. You know, if I had to rank these guys on a scale of 0 to 99 in terms of overall players, you know, I would probably put Drexler at a 94-95. And I would put Dwayne Wade probably at 92-93.
And you know what, man? I can't argue with that. I really can't. I think you laid out a real solid argument. You know, I think the one knock that someone would criticize Drexler is that, you know, he couldn't carry a team in the way Dwayne Wade could. But I think the way you laid that out, I think, you know, again, if you compare it to today where, you know, he'd have the opportunity to carry a team because it's not as deep. You know, and then with the rules that allow you not to put your hands on people on a perimeter, you know, I think that's another 6 points to anybody scoring average from the 80s. You know, any decent perimeter player, any top-tier perimeter player, that's another 6 points on their scoring average right there, the fact that guys can't put their hands on you. And I think – but that's not the thing that I think puts Drexler over the top for me. The thing that puts Drexler over the top for me, and I think – part of that is what we saw this season, is that I think Drexler proved throughout his career he could play with other great players, and he could fit in with other great players. And that shows the versatility to his game. That shows that he's a ball player, first and foremost, where I think D-Wade is a scorer. D-Wade is a scorer. Like I said, he's a shot maker. And he's an excellent defender, but his most – important skill, his biggest impact comes on the offensive end. And when that's not clicking, he's a different kind of – it's hard for him to impact the game. It's hard for D-Wade to impact the game when his scoring is not there, when his scoring opportunities aren't there. It's hard for him to be an impactful player. Whereas I think Clyde proved – and again, D-Wade still has some time to show that he can do this. But Clyde proved throughout his career that he could play with other great players seamlessly, effortlessly, and make it work. He had a game where for him to play with other great players, he didn't have to sacrifice any parts of his game. He could still do what he needed to do. He just didn't have to do it as frequently. And I think that was the beauty of Clyde's game. And that's why I agree. I would give Clyde about a 94, 95. And, you know, I would put D-Wade probably at a 90, 91 overall. So I would knock D-Wade down a notch. I think I'll have him a little bit lower than you. Yeah, so I think we're both going Clyde on that one. So we've got to get a running tally going and start to post these on the Facebook page and get these up on Twitter. So the fans can respond to him. We got about 60 seconds left. Phil, you know, closing words, closing arguments to for the people out there, for the listeners. What you got?
Back to the Dodgers, man, going through that bankrupt situation. It's a sad day. You know, this McCourt made a push to buy the Red Sox. I mean, this could be the Red Sox. You know, I mean, the Dodgers have had some pretty thin years, but we could be looking at the Red Sox going through this. So I'm thankful that it's the Dodgers and not the Red Sox.
Yeah, man. Anytime you see a great franchise going through something like this, it does do your heart wrong. It doesn't feel good. You know, I think baseball's got some things they got to fix. And that's something that we can get in next show, man, talking about some of the baseball and some other sports, and how will we go about, you know, if we could be commissioner of MMA or baseball or boxing, how will we change the sport to kind of bring it into the 21st century, so to speak. That's something that we'll look into next week as a potential topic. But, you know, thank you for listening. Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, Game Changers. You know, my closing argument, Mayweather, fight Pacquiao already, all right? Shut up and fight Pacquiao. I don't want to hear nothing else to you, fight Pacquiao. All right, otherwise, shut up. You know what I'm saying? But it is what it is, people. Thank you for listening. God bless you. Enjoy the 4th. Be safe. Don't shoot your eye out. Peace. All right, we off the air. That was a good show, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man, you raised some good points with that Clyde argument. I really couldn't argue with, man. Yeah, part of it, I agree with you. I think Clyde is better, but I think the way you framed it, I don't care if you thought D-Wade was better or not. Hold on 1 second, man.
Close the door behind you. Yes, for the next of the
It comes back.
Thank you. You know the song Pop Kids?
Canada, though.